Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPN 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
And joining us now is the one and only Peter Vronsky. How are you doing, Peter?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
So what's going on in the world of Professor Vronsky?
Well, a couple of things. I'm kind of writing a follow-up to my last book, Sons of Cain, tentatively titled The Golden Age of Serial Murder, a term coined by Harold Schechter, who I'm a great admirer of as a writer. So I'm kind of focusing on the history of serial killers in what Schechter kind of tongue-in-cheek described as the Golden Age, this period between 1970 and 1999, where we had this huge surge of serial killers. You know, the John Wayne Gacy, Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy era of serial murder, to which we seem to have, you know, some 20 years later now, have kind of returned with a nostalgia, a whole new generation of people who maybe were not even alive in that era are now being introduced to Ted Bundy and, Edmund Kemper and all those guys, kind of we older folk had grown up with as you know, serial killers being out there in our own times. So there is this kind of strange going back to the times before.
I was going to say, you think that's because so much of it is televised and there's so many programs and podcasts now and everything about the killers?
Well, it's that, and it's also kind of this, you know, almost decline in serial killers over the last 20 years. You know, where are our Jeffrey Dahmers, Ted Bundys today? You know, it's not really, it doesn't kind of, I don't know what the word is. It somehow doesn't kind of grip us in the way, serial murder did. And even these cold cases being broken, like the Golden State Killer was a golden ager. He was too from the 70s and 80s. So it seems like we're drawn back to that era, at least as consumers of serial killer culture and true crime culture. We have these occasional cases, obviously, especially in Canada here. I don't know, from the colonel to the gardener.
Yeah.
Boy, have we been contributing?
For sure.
But politely.
Yeah.
It must be something to do with the cold, because then you have aerial keys from Alaska as well.
Right. Exactly. That's one of the few American kind of serial killers from the recent age that kind of made the headlines. But I think it's partly, fragmentation of media, as you say. You have all these shows, and of course you have online media as well. So, things have become more focused and fragmented, and so we don't get our news anymore from that single source the way we used to in the 90s. So, essentially Jeffrey Dahmer was kind of the last, pre-O.J. Simpson murders, celebrity serial killer, so to speak, of that classic serial killer.
Mm. So, now, if there has the type of serial killers changed, and I mean that as in, are there more women killing now? Is it strictly still, as people say, mainly a white man?
Well, definitely not mainly a white man anymore. More are African Americans or other races than whites. So it's no longer that we have this presumption, that the serial killer is going to be white. So that's certainly changed. The psychology essentially remains the same. The methodology starts changing, of course, the ubiquitousness of cell phones and, online media, of course, has, changed how serial killers troll for their victims now. Now, they can do it online. It helps police as well, of course. A serial homicide investigation is often about putting a single suspect in the vicinity of multiple victims. And, of course, every victim now carries a cell phone, whether the suspect does or not. You're beginning to get a lot more data, geographic data, on the patterns in serial killing that I think, make these cases easier to solve and are solved sometimes, much quicker than they would have been in kind of the pre-cell phone era.
Do you think that the serial killer will evolve, but to get around that?
Well, some certainly will, of course. You have kind of this species of serial killers who are very forensically aware, as police would say. These serial killers will research, they will read academic forensic literature, they will read police manuals. They will keep up to it. So when you have a highly organized and relatively intelligent serial killer, who's not acting on an impulse, they're certainly going to compensate for all these new techniques. Same with DNA. A lot of serial killers are, very aware of DNA.
Now, are women killers becoming more violent in their killing?
Well, it depends what you're, if you're talking about like single murder female killers, I don't really know. It's kind of not my field. Female serial killers, I have historically found. I guess it's how you term violence. I guess if you mean overtly violent, that's a possibility. I mean, using beyond what the traditional method was, poison, certainly as women are more empowered, they're more empowered to use, the kind of weapons that males have used. Although the knife, I think, is certainly the spontaneous murder, non-planned murder, I think is still a leading weapon among female murderers, if I'm not mistaken. Or scissors.
So, but Peter, just it's Julie, just thinking about the trends in terms of, you were saying that there's a significant shift in the expectation that it's going to be a white serial killer as opposed to a black African serial killer that we're seeing more and more now. Has that same trend shifted in women? Are we seeing a cultural shift as well, or?
Well, I think we've certainly seen a cultural shift. I don't know what that cultural shift, by what kind of statistics it's represented. I couldn't tell you. It's been a while since I've looked at female serial killers. So as I'm kind of, even Sons of Cain is essentially focused not only on serial killers, but on a specific category of serial killers, that's, you know, the sexual serial killers. So, you know, I haven't really looked at women serial killers since about 2005 when my book came out. Since then, you know, you certainly are aware of shifts in violence among women, but already I was seeing that in the early 2000s. So, you know, you have kind of this double shift. You have a general drop in murder and homicide and violent crime in the United States since the 1990s. So I don't know if statistically, you know, this is something I should look at, whether statistically you have the same kind of curve, downward curve among female offenders. Are there less female murderers now or female perpetrated murders? Never mind serial murders. I couldn't tell you. So if I don't know, I don't know.
If you've made a decision to look at a specific group of serial killers or type of serial killer, or male or female, was that a conscious decision by yourself to focus on a male rather than a female?
I think partly because, you know, I'm a male and I always, you know, wondered about this aspect of male behavior. Somehow, I think also when people think of the term serial killer, often the Jack the Rippers, John Wayne Gacy's, Ted Bundy's come to mind. And so I think there were so many kind of sociological, historical explanations for female serial killers that I was just more interested in the male version, and in particular, again, the male sexual serial killer, the quote traditional serial killer.
Now, I have to mention, too, now, I've noticed you've been in New Jersey a lot and stuff. Have you been working on the Richard Cottingham case?
Yes, well, exactly. That's, you know, the alpha and omega of everything I've been doing about serial killers. You know, Cottingham, I had very briefly run into as he was fleeing the scene of a crime, quite, you know, everybody knows this story by now. And that was back in 79 when I was 23 years old. And as I was finishing Sons of Cain, I was assuming, you know, the Sons of Cain, the subtitle is History of Serial Killers from the Stone Age to the Present. So there wasn't going to be Volume 3. There's no place to go after the present or before the Stone Age. And so just as I'm finishing the book, the daughter of one of the victims of Richard Cottingham at the hotel where I had encountered him, where he had beheaded two women and took away their heads, those heads were never found, the daughter contacted me and told me that she had been meeting with Cottingham in an attempt to get him to reveal where he buried those heads, or what he did with those heads. And she was having kind of problems getting a sense of narrative from him, and would I come down to New Jersey and visit with him one day? She'll introduce me, and, you know, she kind of said, you know, you can write a book about it, maybe, you know. I thought, shit, yeah, right? I mean, this is, I've written Cottingham. Every time I was going to do a book, I would write Cottingham and, you know, never get a response. So that's how this project came into being. And so I've been now 18 months visiting with him in Trenton State Prison and interviewing him and collecting all this material on his case and his cases. It's a trip. I'm almost speechless because I have no idea whether I'm at the beginning of this book or in the middle of it now or at the end of it. I have no idea as you know, I'm looking at all these, you know, Cottingham claims he murdered 100 women at least. And the more I look and kind of check and research on the things he says, he might not be lying. So just in New Jersey, since 1963 up until 1980, when Cottingham was finally arrested and put away, I've identified about 58 unsolved sexual murders of girls, adolescent girls, teenagers, and young women, unsolved. And I know that three of them Cottingham had now just recently confessed to in 2014 and in 2017. Three cases going back to 1968 and 1969 that have been quietly closed. There's not going to be a prosecution, essentially, because Cottingham's away for the rest of his life. He's never coming out, and they're hoping he's going to confess to more as well. So,
have you talked to any of the families of those particular victims, and, you know, when it comes to a non-prosecution, how they might feel about that?
I have. In fact, I worked with the sister very closely of one of the victims. Jennifer Weiss, the daughter of Dita Godarzi, who was one of the torso victims in New York in 79, put the sister together to talk with Cottingham. Because he had confessed to this 1969 murder almost exactly 50 years ago, now 50 years and a couple of months. And of course, she has been, since 1969, harboring all these different suspects and just not understanding why that case was not closed and resolved. And she had this opportunity to talk to Cottingham. She actually forgave him. And I think that kind of helped her. That's not going to be the position of a lot of victim families. So, you know, I kind of try not to intrude on victim families. I'm easy to find, and so if they need somehow to be in touch with me, they do get in touch with me. But I kind of try to leave victim families alone in these cases, unless I need their, you know, help to open the case or perhaps even assist in closing a case.
That makes sense.
So with Cunningham, so did you ever find the heads, or did you ever hear a resolution to what happened to them?
The heads were looked for and weren't found where he said they were. They're kind of, you know, depending on his 73-year-old memory, and his memory definitely, I know, is failing, as you know. I mean, I'm in my 60s, and I know how my memory's gone over the last 15 years or so. So I imagine hitting 73. What I have to say is that when Jennifer and I contacted both NYPD and Bergen County prosecutor's office that in whose jurisdiction this case would have been, the response was surprisingly swift and decisive. They did a search. They brought all the technology and all the animals in. I might have not quite done it the way they did it, but they did it. They're satisfied that the heads might have been where he says they were, or are not. The bottom line is the heads weren't found. They're still.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Looking, trying to expand that area. It's a kind of a limited area. But, you know, we're talking 40 years, and it's near a riverfront. And so it's been, you know, there are all sorts of reasons why the heads might not be there, aside from the one big thing, and this is the entire nightmare of interviewing a serial killer, that he's blatantly lying to us. That this is, you know, this is what psychopaths do. Not necessarily to deceive, but simply to do. You know, so some of them believe in their own lies. So, you know, from his descriptions, I was able to pinpoint a very narrow area. And to this day, I don't know whether, you know, certainly NYPD, as I said, wanted to find those heads. We even had reactions there from cadaver dogs. So that kind of brought them back with equipment. Was a big exercise. It could be that he buried them in that general area, or it could be simply this romantic story that he had spun for Jennifer, rather than tell her that he threw her mother's heads, you know, into a trash bin or somewhere, and then were never found. He spun this story about selecting this beautiful location because he had felt bad having killed her and so forth. You know, we certainly would like to have found the heads, but I will know eventually to what extent he's been lying and bullshit.
Oh, my.
You know, as I go down the line interviewing him, you begin to kind of divide things that are possibly false in his memory, or just things that he sincerely believes in but are not true, or outright blatant lies.
His motive for lying might just be that's his thing that he wants to keep to himself. You know, we've seen it with a few serial killers where they'll keep one thing that is very personal to them, something that thrills them, a secret, because they don't want to share it.
That's right. Exactly. So you know that is he holding on to the last vestiges of you know what his connection to the outside, to freedom,
right?
Is a big question, and that's the nature of the beast. And I should say, you know, this is like the first serial killer I'm sitting down and interviewing. In all these years, I never wanted to, other than him, because of just that personal thing. And so, I've watched hundreds of hours of interviews with serial killers, read transcripts and so forth, and nothing was really asked of them that, I would want to ask. I that's the same questions I would ask. And so the answers were not very satisfying. And so I never had a kind of desire to go in there. I had nothing new to ask them. But in the case of Cottingham, of course, that's a whole different animal there.
Well, was he known for taking all of the heads and leaving the torsos? Or what did he do with others?
What's amazing about Cottingham is just the diversity and versatility of his victims. Some he had known, some he dated, some were, quote, respectable working employed women or a mother and a housewife. Others were runaways or prostitutes, and so the range of where he left them as well. Some were schoolgirls, right? The because he killed for so long, you know, he doesn't confess. He's put away in 1980 for the murders that he had committed between 1977 and 1980. In 1977, he kills an X-ray technician, a nurse by the name of Carr. And then there's really nothing on him until 1979, where in 1979 he'll now commit those two murders in a hotel in New York, sever their heads, set their torsos on fire. Then he'll return back to New Jersey and he'll kill a girl in the motel. Then he'll return back to New York and kill a prostitute. The girl in the motel was a prostitute in the New York motel. And here, rather than cutting her head off, he'll sever her breasts and pose them on the bed and set her body on fire in that hotel room. In New Jersey, in the motel murders there, he's doing a completely different thing. There he leaves the body stuffed underneath the bed. No mutilation whatsoever. So police are kind of looking at this strange string of murders on both sides of the river, but they're so different. There's no assumption that there's a serial killer out there. And nobody ever looked at him for those murders in 68 and 69 until 2010. In 2010, Cottingham confesses now to a murder he committed in 1967, 10 years before the earliest known murder. Because that's, the murder of Vogel. And now he's confessed to three murders subsequent to 67, and the victims are completely different now from the 67, who's a 29-year-old housewife with kids, who he knew, and the three adolescent and teenage girls he kills now in New Jersey in a completely different way in 68 and 69, which he has confessed to. And that's the game changer. So anything is possible now with Cottingham. And of course, he himself says that, he traveled extensively in the United States. He would drive to his where his parents retired, in Tampa, Florida. So we're talking, that road down there. He would often fly to Las Vegas to gamble. So, we're talking about the desert out there. And then you have, of course, New York, where he worked, and all the, states in that region. So there are at least, I would say, five cold case squads in five different jurisdictions currently actively investigating Cottingham as a suspect in series of murders going back, as they say, as early as the 1960s.
Hmm. Wow, that's going to be. When do you think you'll get that finished?
Yeah,
I know. It's one of those.
Yeah.
How can you say,
Yeah, this is a very different book from the kind, because as a historian, you kind of are writing about the long past. You're dealing with, archival sources, documents, other literature and so forth. You're synthesizing that kind of in your own historical premise, and it essentially is your evidence. So it's a kind of a table top kind of type of writing, where this book is something I have never done. It's closer to what I used to do in the film business when I was making documentaries, where I would essentially throw myself into this adventure and make sure I have a camera crew with me, and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know where it ends and when it ends, and now I'm doing it as a writer, essentially, and so there is that active aspect, and then there's the research aspect and the personal kind of interview aspect, because I'm dealing with all these living people as witnesses, from you know, cops who investigated him, cops who are currently investigating him. You know, some guys investigating Cottingham hadn't even been born when Cottingham was put away. You know, this has been a lot of years has gone by, and then of course the historical documents as well, just what happened in the five trials that took place. You know, Cottingham fought tooth and nail. In, you know, he's arrested, as I say, in 1980, and the last trial was going to end in 1984. There were three trials, and Cottingham fought tooth and nail, insisting that he's innocent through those 4 years. Never cracked, right? And never talked to the press afterwards. He vanished. The person who kind of got Cottingham into the light was Nadia Fitzani in 2009. Nadia Fitzani, who kind of resembles Dida Godarzi as well. She's of Tunisian origin, where Dida Godarzi was, she's described as Kuwaiti, but she wasn't. Dida Godarzi was Iranian. She just had been born to Iranians employed in Kuwait, but she's Persian. And her story is fascinating as I'm putting it together through, you know, kind of the intersection of this victim and the perpetrator. But Nadia Fitzani started corresponding with Richard Cottingham. You know, she's a journalist based in Montreal. I think now she's in the U.S. And Nadia persuaded Cottingham, because he wanted to meet her, to do a one-hour interview for French television on the promise that this interview would never see the light of day in English in North America, and not realizing and not understanding YouTube, right? And so 2010, Cottingham makes this first time, you know, since ever. He never talked to any journalist ever, you know, didn't sell any of his, you know, artwork. The only people he corresponded with, obviously, were women. And that's a key, too. You know, often sex serial killers are not really interested in corresponding with males, you know, unless of course they're gay serial killers. So Nadia managed to get all this access to Cottingham, and as did then, you know, Jennifer Weiss, who looks, you know, has her mother's features, and she was inspired by Nadia. She, you know, she was very frightened of Cottingham after learning that he had killed her mother. You know, this was a recent thing she had learned, because what happened, of course, you know, how they identified Dida Godarzi was on the basis of a cesarean scar. And so when they started looking for women gone missing who, as well, she had a pair of shoes that were only sold in a few places in New Jersey. So they started looking for women who disappeared in New Jersey who might have had a cesarean scar, and eventually pulled her x-rays out from a hospital in Trenton and identified her by these anomalies in her bone structure in the x-rays. That's how they got her name. And a year before that, she had given up this infant girl for adoption, considering her lifestyle, right? And so Jennifer Weiss is the girl. And so as she is in her early 20s, sometimes in the early 2000s, she wants to find now her biological mother. And she manages to track down and open the adoption record. And there she finds out that she's a victim of a serial homicide. And now, for years, she has this kind of hysterical, almost fear of serial killers until she sees that YouTube interview that Nadia does with Richard Cottingham. And Cottingham, of course, now looks like Santa Claus. In fact, that's his kind of nickname, Bad Santa.
Look, that's in the visiting scary, room. That's a pretty yeah. scary Santa Claus, actually.
You know, Cottingham now, you know, he essentially, like, literally looks like Santa Claus. He's this huge white beard, flowing hair down to his shoulders, and on top of that, he's got this kind of baby Kris Kringle face. You know, so as they wheel him through the visiting room, you know, you sometimes hear, like, kids going, "Bad Santa, Bad Santa," you know. And so because he's so amiable, you know, kind of a New Jersey Bronx boy accent, good sense of humor, like I say, this kind of amiability, which is precisely how he got all these women to trust him until he put him into a vulnerable position, and then he would pounce, right? Jennifer went to see him, and so they formed this, you know, kind of relationship now, partly adversarial, partly conspiratorial. With her kind of offering him her forgiveness, and him, you know, here's where history will have to come into play. We don't know yet, until it becomes history, whether Cottingham sincerely has given her the location of her mother's head, or whether this, you know, he's just mistaken, or he's just jerking us around. You know, the thing when you're interviewing psychopaths is psychopaths are very good at lying because they have a technique where they build their lies on a foundational core of truths. And so that also, however, puts them in a vulnerable position if you have the time and patience to continue talking with them. Because eventually what you do is you look away from what the answer to your question is going to be and listen to the truths on which they build the lie. Like picking, you know, corn kernels out of a pile of boat.
Oh, my.
And so eventually, interview after interview, you have a few lies, but then you have a lot of foundational truths. And you got to work with those truths, and when you start putting them all together, then some things get revealed that they actually would rather you not have found out.
Well, now you have a website, and what's the website so people can...
My website is petervronsky.org.
Perfect. Well,
and as well as I have one specifically for the New Jersey murders called newjerseygirlmurders.org.
Okay, well, we'll check that out. I will have that posted on our website as well, so our listeners can go to it and one click and they find you.
Great. It's a pleasure being on, and look forward to hearing this.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thanks,
Take
Peter.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.